This episode of Motherhood in Hollywood is sponsored by Kinsa, the world's smartest thermometer. When my daughter Channing isn't feeling well, Kinsa is the only thermometer I trust. It remembers her temperature, symptoms, and medications, so I don't miss a beat. Find it now at kinsahealth.com, the world's smartest thermometer. Motherhood in Hollywood is also sponsored by BumbyBox, an eco-friendly toy subscription service your kids will love. Each BumbyBox comes with fun, play-based toys and activities specially chosen for your child. And if you enter the code MIHOOD at checkout, you'll get 10% off your order. Go to BumbyBox.com and find out why BumbyBox is a better way to play.
Come on, Mama!
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
It's episode 43 of Motherhood in Hollywood. I'm Heather. Thanks for joining me on the show today, you guys. We have a wonderful episode today. It's quite a bit different than some of the other shows we've done before because I want to take a minute to acknowledge and to honor the fact that this is National Infertility Awareness Week. It is a very important time to honor women and acknowledge the women in our lives and in the world who have struggled with infertility. I have had several friends who have gone through fertility challenges, and it's heartbreaking to watch people you love go through something like that. And especially when they just want to be a mom. They just want to hold a little baby in their arms. And it breaks my heart. It makes me feel very helpless when someone I love is going through something like that. So I am taking the opportunity and the platform that is Motherhood in Hollywood this week to discuss infertility and discuss what's going on, why women tend to be so secretive about it, why there's sort of a shame or a stigma attached to it. Maybe that's not your experience, but it has been mine a little bit with some of the people I know who are not as open about infertility. So I thought, what better way to bring to light this important topic than by having one of the most boisterous and vocal supporters of talking about infertility and making fertility awareness a topic that's in the public forum, if you will, than Wendy Burch. Wendy Burch is a mom, an award-winning journalist, and just one of the most vivacious and funny women that you'll ever meet. She's a reporter here for a local news station at KTLA, and that's how we met when I was a writer and producer and worked with her several years ago, and witnessed a lot of the fertility challenges from afar a little bit. I didn't want to get up in her business, but she certainly wasn't private about it or shy. She didn't keep it to herself. She documented the entire experience that she went through on the Huffington Post and sometimes even on the air on KTLA. I know they did a special video series on that. She's very open, very honest, very real. And this might be a difficult show for some people to listen to. And I hope that you find some comfort and some inspiration in it and are able to relate in some way to Wendy's story. We have a lot of fun during the podcast as well. So it's not all, heartache and sadness for sure. Because like I said, she's a very vivacious lady and is still very much full of joy. So I loved having her on the episode today. I also want to mention really quick, there's only a week left of my MIH 15 by 15. And I am not quite where I want to be, but I'm not giving up yet. I'm still pushing forward. And that's really the ultimate goal of the 15 by 15. I can't believe it's been 4 months. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about all of the things that I've done in the next week's episode. So be on the lookout at motherhoodinhollywood.com for updates on the MIH 15 by 15. And make sure you take a minute to please subscribe to Motherhood in Hollywood. If you're a fan of the show, if you're enjoying hearing from these wonderful guests that I'm bringing you every week, men and women, please take a minute to subscribe on iTunes and leave a review for the show. It makes such a huge difference in whatever iTunes does for their algorithms and, you know, rankings and whatnot. The more visibility Motherhood in Hollywood gets, the more opportunities I have to share the show and all my hard work with the world. So I appreciate you taking the time to do that and share it with a friend. If you don't like it, keep it to yourself. Nobody cares. All right. I want to go ahead and just wrap up the mommy monologue today and get right into my interview with Wendy Burch. I hope you guys enjoy this. I hope it touches your heart in some way, in the way that it touched mine. So here's Wendy. Okay, everybody. I am really excited for my guest today. It is TV's Wendy Burch.
I love that introduction. It is TV's Wendy Burch.
I feel like every time you walk into a room, someone should say, ladies and gentlemen, it's TV's Wendy Burch.
You know, it's funny because the news writers will still say that sometimes when I come in. It's never just, there's Wendy. It's like, hey, ladies and gentlemen, it's TV's Wendy Burch.
Do you, I always feel like because of San Rubin at KTLA, I always want to be called the angry news writer. Because, you know, he calls all the writers that. It's, I love it so much. I'm like, we are all a little angry.
Well, I think when you tell someone your job is to come in at midnight and then for hours upon end, you need to write news copy about horrific events that have transpired. Right. And yes, I think you would tend to be angry. I would be very angry.
A little bitter. But I will say we had so much fun. I know I had so much fun working with you. Like there were mornings when they were like, oh, you're with Wendy today. And I'm like, yeah.
I do try to make, I try to take the easy path. That's not saying that it's the lazy path.
No,
it's
there's
just
a difference.
There's a path of least resistance to get it on the air.
But also you've been doing news long enough where you know you don't have to add a lot of bullshit into it. And you can cuss if you want, if you feel comfortable.
Oh, good. I like that. The FCC is not listening?
No.
Oh, that's
no
fabulous.
No one's listening. No, I'm kidding. All of LA, but no one else.
But no one beyond that.
No, like, I love that because you are pro. Like, you've been in news for a long time, and you know you don't have to add a bunch of, like, frills and stuff to a shooting story or a fire story, you know?
I always think that my one of my talents is when the writers will say, well, we have some sound from that shooting scene. Do you want to know what they say? And I go, well, let's see. They probably will say, I can't believe it happened here.
Right.
Nothing like this ever happened. He was such a nice guy.
He
always waved.
Nice guy. I know.
He always waved, which my thing, too, is if you have a neighbor that waves, chances are they will be the one
the
that will kill somebody.
Yeah, they're
so,
the murderer.
So if you wave at me in a neighborhood, I'm like, wow, I won't
especially
wave back.
Especially in L.A. No one's waving like, hey, is that guy waving at me? Get in the car.
He's going to kill someone.
He's going to kill someone.
I know, this so sounds, I know this sounds cynical, but that is the way that it is. And, you know, and then if there's ever like a, you know, a big storm or something, you know, a tornado, it's like it sounded like a freight train.
Oh, my gosh. Sounded like a freight train. Heard it coming.
Yeah.
I'm from Oklahoma, so we had lots of tornadoes.
Yeah.
And everyone, it was just like a big freight train, and we didn't know what to do. And I was like.
But no one hears a freight train and says, hey, that sounds like a tornado.
Right.
So, you know, I think there's a problem there. Discrimination against the freight trains. But now, I digress.
You have always had such a strong and powerful personality. Do you think that has conflicted with your serious news
self? Oh, absolutely.
Self? Is it hard for you to be serious? Because I know you get to do more, a little bit lighter stories
well,
now.
Well, I think now I'm at the right station for that.
Yeah.
Because I think KTLA, if you watch our morning show, is very much a strong mix of hard and soft. And we go back and forth. And I think that is probably, I think, the best part of our show because we've been doing it for so long.
Right.
We kind of artfully go back and forth, where I think other stations sort of struggle with who they are. And we're like, we're a little bit country, we're a little bit rock and roll.
Right.
We go
right.
Both ways. But, you know, I started here in Los Angeles, little known to people that I started years ago in the 1990s at KCAL. I worked there for a brief period of time when there at the Paramount lot. Then I went away. I anchored in another market, and I came back, and I worked at Channel 7, which, as you know, Channel 7 is a brand, and it is ABC 7 Eyewitness News, and I had a Circle 7 tattooed on my ass. I had to get that. Dr. Tatoff. No, I'm kidding about that. But that was such a serious market. But then again, I came up through strong journalism. I have a strong journalism background, mm-hmm. and I know how to do the murder, the mayhem, and the mudslides, and I covered all the big high-profile court cases. But occasionally, a little personality would slip out, and people would come to me, and they're like, you're so funny. I'm like, I didn't say anything funny. I think maybe I just smirked. Yeah. But in that environment...
Like, when somebody said, he was such a nice guy, and then you're like, oh, you just feel your eyes rolling. Oh, God.
But now that I'm at KTLA, I think that that has come out. It is wonderful to connect with the viewers. I think it still makes management very nervous.
I'm sure.
But I also think that the viewers really get it because I'm established in this market as mm-hmm. a journalist. So mm-hmm. I think that they know. Like, for instance, last week I was covering something at one of the wildlife rescue centers. They were having Earth Day celebration coming up. So I'm literally taking a selfie with a wolf, and then I'm in a cage with a bobcat. You know, I'm hanging out with a tortoise. I'm talking to some kids. And then they call me and they say, we need to break you and move you to Torrance because a guy's just gone nuts with a chainsaw and threatened to kill his boss. And
perfect.
I'm like, okay. So I went, and then the next hour I did that. And
wait, like, did you really say okay, or were you just like, fuck you guys, this is
I have
stupid.
Given, given up on the – I don't even fight the battles anymore. Because it,
did you try to fight the man a little bit?
I used to fight the man all the time, and now I'm like, whatever. I just go. I just go. You know, because you want to fight, and you want, but you realize that they've already made up their mind that that's what they want.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard to argue that, you know.
They're not going to let go.
But I've got a bobcat lined up for 8:10.
But I just feel like, you know, they do a lot of research in news. There's a ton of money spent on research and development mm-hmm. and consultants who tell them, no, people want to see the crimes. They want to see the car chases and all that stuff. But then you talk to people and they're like, why isn't the news ever happy or fun
or
good?
But see, so I think people I think they want it all. I mean, everyone says, because it seems like the right thing to say, we want good news, we want inspiring stories.
Yeah.
But the reality is, a high-speed chase breaks out. Some guys in Hollywood are doing donuts. Everybody stops and watches. You know, they stream it. I'm listening to it on the radio. I go home and watch it. I mean, I'm a newsie, so I like it. But and you see it, too, in our newsroom. A high-speed chase breaks out.
Everyone
stops what they're doing. And there is a collective, whoa, hey,
yes.
Everyone watches. So I think that it is the reason why, I think it's human nature. It is the reason why there's an accident on the right side of the road and everyone slows down on the left-hand side.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as we'd love to say, we're not going to slow down to look at the car wreck, human nature is that we do.
You just do.
And you can make the same argument about reality television and all of that. Everyone goes, we need quality programming, but when are the Kardashians on? So I think that it is what it is.
That's a tough one for me because I am an actor. Yeah. And for me, the invention of reality television basically, you know, kind of was the downfall of scripted television and a lot of opportunities to work. That's sort of bouncing back now with like cable shows and online streaming and stuff like that. There's more content. But reality television is a tough one for me because I'm like, fuck, I will watch the Kardashians, but I do not want anyone to know.
Exactly. Those Real Housewives
I will watch this.
Of Atlanta.
I know you are friends with some Real Housewives.
I know, so. But I really, to me, it's Atlanta that pulls me in. I'm like,
really?
Those
that's
women
the one?
Are hilarious.
Now, you're friends with some of the Beverly Hills and Orange County ones? Or
I have an acquaintance with some of the Orange County. No, it's actually the L.A. girls, especially the first year, the first cast. They mm-hmm. they were all my
So
my
do you
buddies.
Find yourself watching that show and being like, this is so fake, or
the
they
first,
my friend would never
I
do
don't
that?
I really watch it as much now, but those first couple of years I did. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to bring the podcast down, but Taylor Armstrong, Adrienne Maloof, and Lisa Vanderpump were all of my friends and had been my friends for years. Adrienne's one of my best friends, actually. I used to date her brother. That's a very long story. It's not that interesting. Well, there's parts of it that are. But nonetheless, so she gets cast. I encourage her to do it. Mm-hmm. I say great platform because you cannot deny that that show is a great
platform. Has made stars.
And as
Absolutely.
Much as I hate The Housewives, I also mm-hmm. love that all of a sudden women who are in their 40s or their 50s are basically
having a resurgence
in their career and are being looked to, and it's not just a 21-year-old girl running around. At least,
I
mean, as wacky as it is and as dramatic as they make it become,
at
least there's a part where older women are being, you know.
Are on TV.
And,
and it's not like in a grandma role or a matronly role.
Yeah, I mean,
role.
As crazy as it is, it mm-hmm. is what it is. What was difficult for me, and I made plenty of cameo appearances, and by the way, you know, I'd always know how to be like, I understand TV, so I'm like, oh, walk by this way.
Yeah, you do. That's hilarious.
But I would know how to set some things up. So I had a great time. And it was so funny, too, because as much as I'm on television here in Los Angeles.
It's different.
It's different.
Yeah.
I had one of the guys in News Center one morning got in my ear and he goes, Wendy. It was like 5 a.m. I'm like, what? He's like, I saw you on TV last night. I'm like, you see me on TV every morning.
Like, what do you mean? But it's different. It's different.
It's different. It's a whole different thing.
I know for me, it's the opposite effect with my actor friends because they don't know I used to be a reporter. So when they see my reporter reel, which is on my website and like on YouTube or whatever, when they see that, they're like, oh my God, like you used to do the news. And I'm like, yeah, it's still the same as being on TV, but just different, I guess. But people are fascinated with newscasters.
Yes, they are.
They are fascinated with them because there's something intimate about somebody who's coming into your house every evening and they're telling stories.
Especially, too, working the morning news.
Yeah.
The KTLA morning news is kind of a, you know, look, we're very strong. We've been doing it for a long time. People actually really watch. You don't see a lot of people. News numbers for those out there are down across the board, but morning television numbers tend to be the area that grow, and you become a part of somebody's morning routine. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing to me because I've worked all over the place, and you know, I've worked, you know, number one newscast in the evenings is KABC, and I was a part of that. Mm-hmm. But they don't know you. I mean, I was at Costco the other day. That was my first venture to Costco, but I had my baby with me, Brady, and we were walking out, and this guy's like, "Hey, I know that kid. How's Brady?" And I'm like, "Oh my gosh!"
Awkward.
I mean,
but like, was it a good feeling or is it creepy, scary?
You know what? No, it's really good, to be honest. I mean, because I think most people, and I go out of my way to also, you know, introduce myself and say hello. And I mean, that's, you know.
I feel like fandom with newscasters is different than fandom with like TV stars, like or movie stars. Chris and I were just at Travel Town this morning. Yeah. Have you been to Travel Town yet with Brady?
Of course I have. Yes.
I was going to say, you have a little boy, so I know you have. We were just there, and Brandon Routh was on the train with us and walking around with his little boy. He played Superman in a movie, one of the reimaginings of that a couple years ago, but he also plays the Atom on The Flash. So for nerds, like, it's a pretty big like celebrity signing, but he's just there hanging out in the park with his kid. But I still wanted to be like, hey, how's it going? But I was like, be cool.
I think it's all your reference, to be honest. I've been next to my girlfriends who, you know, are housewives, or I've been next to actresses and stuff like that, and I've gotten just as much,
do you get starstruck?
More. No.
Oh.
I've got more people coming up to me. And I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. They feel that I'm more approachable. I'm in their home every morning. I'm a part of their morning routine as far as, you know, star X, Y, and Z. You know, oh, I had to pay to go see them or whatever. But that's Wendy, and I know all about her.
So. Yeah.
And then you also get the people that want to come and tell you their sad story, or their this story, or their that story, or their... So you get into the conversation.
I would get a lot of people who would say, hey, can you, like, cover this for us? Or I'm holding this bake sale.
I get that a lot.
For my kids, something. And can you, like, you know, have them send a news crew? No, they're not. Is anybody shot at your bake sale? Then we're not coming.
We're not coming.
Sorry. But it's hard to explain that to people that you know, it's just
not
as
Well, you know, and occasionally, you know, there's a slow news day here and there. Sometimes
we may cover a bake sale.
we might cover it, so, you know.
And that leads me to, I want to talk to you about Good News, Wendy.
Yes.
Tell me about Good News, Wendy. That's your charity, right?
Yes. It was a charity that I started years ago.
Mm-hmm. Are you still doing it?
No, actually, I'm not. But that's fine. It still exists, and I launched it. And, you know, while I was there, we gave away more than $1.5 million. I'm a mom now.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm.
And something flashed onto me that basically you can't do it all when you're a mother.
Yeah. And was that the one thing that you decided you needed
had to go in order for something else to come into my life, because that was my baby.
Yeah.
That was my baby. Nonprofit work is wonderful.
Involved. Yeah.
But anyone who's involved in a nonprofit knows that it is exhausting and it never ends, and there's always more you can be doing, and it is wonderful work, but it is also challenging.
Yeah. And I do want to talk about your baby.
Yes.
Who is so handsome and so cute. His first birthday party, I was looking at the pictures and I was like, oh my God, he's so big.
Look, that party got out of control real fast.
But I love that you did that though, because that's very Wendy. Everything is very fabulous and very like has a little bit of extra like pizzazz to it.
Well,
as it
I wanted to do something.
Yeah.
And then his birthday came up
the birthday,
first
birthday. You have to.
Well, that was it. And so many people have been a part of my story and a part of Brady's life. And, you know, and I just have so many wonderful friends who just really, when I talk about being showered with gifts, I felt so many people were a part of this. And I let people in on the whole journey of fertility and everything that I went through to bring Brady. And he truly is a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to find something, and I was, first of all, shocked at how much kid birthdays could be. Like, just going to the Giggles and Hugs or the Play Place or the whatever, the Treehouse. And I'm like, and that's just for Bad Cheese Pizza.
That's
and
Bad Cheese Pizza. Bad Cheese Pizza.
And no adult wants to be there. They're right, just like, tick tock, tick tock. So I go, I want to find and do something kind of cute. So Brady loves to dance. I mean, he's just like this little dancing machine. Mm-hmm. And his favorite song is She's a Very Freaky Girl, the kind you don't want to bring home to mother, which is sad, but he loves that song.
I'm seeing visions of something in the future.
He's
going to
bring home a freaky girl, and he's going to say, well, you played that all the time when I was younger.
You get what you asked for, it, Mom.
So it's wonderful to have all the right friends in all the right places, and I happen to have great friends over at AEG and Club Nokia, and I had done an event there with the Good News Foundation, so I knew the people that operated it. And there's a VIP lounge at the top of Club Nokia. This is down at LA Live. Mm-hmm. I was familiar with the venue and that, so I called them, and I said, you know, I'd like to do a dance party, like a nightclub party, you know, for my Aunt Baby's first world tour.
Yeah.
And so it took off from there, and we had bubble
machines.
You had
like a step and repeat.
We had a step and repeat. Perfect. We had
very LA,
little
very
VIP
fabulous.
Passes. But the most fun, too, and I didn't realize this going in, you, if you're throwing a kid's birthday party, also have to give the kids that come gifts.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize that bags. You had to do
you
gift
don't
back.
Have to do that.
I know,
but it's a very LA.
It's like a very LA.
Well, I think everybody does it now, but it's, it's sort of expected, which is, you
give
know,
them a little something. So what we did was a celebrity swag lounge. So I bought a bunch of stuff online, like at Amazon. So the kids would go and they'd pick out their sunglasses and they had little bags. So they were like gifted.
Oh, I
love
it. And
they got to pick out stuff. And then what else did we do? We had a tattoo parlor, and then I had little hair extensions. There was a hair extension parlor. And
my daughter would love that.
Frank's son was the DJ. It was just the whole thing.
How old is Frank's son now?
He's like 18. He's a USC. Yeah.
Yeah. Frank
DJ,
is old. I forgot.
DJ
about that.
Ben Buckley.
Frank is old. I'm just going to say that. Frank Buckley.
So it was fun. So it was just like 150 of Brady's closest friends. but it was, was just joy. It was joy.
Oh, did you hear that? Hold on.
We should check. We should check on the baby.
All right, I'm going to take this opportunity to tell you a little more about Kinsa, the world's smartest thermometer. It truly does give parents peace of mind. I had to use the Kinsa recently when Channing wasn't feeling well. She had a crazy high fever. I was able to take her temperature several times and keep track of it. Didn't have to fumble with a piece of paper, didn't have to worry about remembering temperatures. When you're in the heat of the moment, it helps to have something there that can give you peace of mind, and that's exactly what the Kinsa did for me. I was able to tell my doctor what was going on, describe her symptoms, and give him an accurate recording of her temperatures. If you'd like to find out more about Kinsa, go to kinsahealth.com, the world's smartest thermometer. I also want to tell you guys more about BombiBox. I'm so excited about this product because it's an eco-friendly toy subscription service your kids will love. Each BombiBox gets delivered right to your door, and they come with play-based toys that are specifically chosen for your child. So if you're like me, you have great memories of playing with your parents when you were growing up. Well, now BombiBox wants to help you create new memories with your child. Go to BombiBox.com to find out why BombiBox is a better way to play, and enter the code MIHOOD at checkout, and you can get 10% off your order. BombiBox is a better way to play. Okay, so we just had to have a quick little station break there, a little podcast break, because Channing rang the doorbell.
And then drama ensued after that.
And then
that.
There was a little, some tears because she got in trouble for ringing the doorbell and, you know, whatever.
Kids,
what are you going to do? So I do want to talk to you about your story with Brady, because it's such a compelling and wonderful story. And I have very specific memories of you talking about your passion for kids and wanting to be a mom. But I'm going to back up a little bit first. So when did you first realize you wanted to be a mom? Was it something you always like?
Yeah. I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah. There was never like a moment when I thought, oh, well, maybe I'll be one of those women that don't have children. I always just thought that I would meet the wonderful man and we'd marry and I'd have a baby and there would be no problems.
Even in news, even as a journalist, you felt that way?
Yeah, sure. You know, I mean, I knew journalists were married, so it didn't seem improbable at all. So I moved from market to market, and I got to Los Angeles around my 30s. And of course I had boyfriends and heartaches and all of that. And you know, you start working in Los Angeles, and I think out here too, because there are no seasons, I think you can lose track of time. It's like you move, you go to a latte, you go to a yoga class, you grab a soy latte, and like 10 years has gone by. You're like, what happened?
Right.
So I came out here and I started working, and perhaps news and news schedules aren't the most conducive to being out and being social. I mean, you know, while a lot of people are out on a Friday night, you know, at a bar or restaurant meeting people, you're in Rancho Cucamonga because there's a homicide.
Or some fire or something.
Time just started to slip away. And then I think I was in denial about a lot of it. I had looked into freezing my eggs when I was in my 30s, but it was very expensive and it was still almost experimental at that time. And I was still forever the optimist that I would just meet someone and marry them and it would be done. I didn't meet Brady's father until I was 40. I turned 40, I met him, and I'm like, this is it. And then I was like, game on. This is it. You know, we have no time to waste. So I went, you know, from 0 to 60 right there on the quest to have a baby. And I started trying everything. And I was very open about that I needed to go right into fertility treatments. Like, I didn't have any time to waste.
So you were aware, like, had you done research and, you know, I don't know if you had covered stories about fertility.
I had, and one of the things that had upset me from early on, and this is why I decided to do a story of me going through and getting my eggs tested and finding out what my levels were, because I feel like there was this, especially here in Los Angeles and in Hollywood, there is this misconception that you can wait and it's fine, you can have a baby. Because for every cover of People magazine where you have a Mariah Carey or a Jennifer Lopez sitting there with their twins at 41 or 42 and saying, look at my miracle babies, and you can read the whole article and never once do they discuss, I froze my eggs or I used a donor egg, or no one ever talks about that.
I remember Marsha Cross at 44 had twins.
Well, she did come out honestly.
Did she eventually
and say
come
yes.
out?
No, she did.
Now Janet Jackson is going through it, but she's not. It's come out and said it, right?
No, yeah, she hasn't really said it.
She's 49.
She's 49. So let me tell you, unless she froze her eggs, which, look, when you have an enormous amount of wealth, you know, freezing your eggs isn't a challenge.
You're not.
Because it's right now to freeze your eggs, you're into it at least $15,000. Now that pales in comparison to the money that you can spend if you wait and then you have to go through in vitro and everything that
all
I went
of
through.
The,
I started stopped counting after I'd spent $50,000 trying to have a baby. So I know Brady was more than that. I just had to stop counting. It just hurt too much. It hurt too much. So I decided to come forward and say, look, I am trying to get pregnant. I am 41 years old at the time that I really started. And I said, and I'm going to be honest about it, that I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to go through in vitro. And once I went down that road and I opened up that dialogue for conversation, and Kay Taylor was great at the time. They let me do a 5-part series on what it would take to freeze your eggs and what people were going through. The statistics are that 1 in 10 couples out there struggle with fertility problems. That's a huge number. But yet, when you look at how high that number, nobody talks about it.
Nobody talks about it, yeah. Do you think there's a shame that's coming with that? Do you think women are embarrassed somehow? Or men even are embarrassed?
I think so. Until we open up the dialogue, I think it's secretive because we've made it that way. And so people don't discuss it. Like, oh, I don't want to talk about that secret. Yeah. That's our problem behind closed doors. And I think for women, there's a whole lot that goes into it. Perhaps you feel like you're not woman enough, or, you know, then you have to justify why you put your career in front of your family. And, you know, there are issues too. And I'm much more sensitive to when the problem with the fertility is on the man's side, because I think this is the essence of you know, all things manliness. So I understand why that's more difficult to speak about. But, you know, women don't even talk about miscarriages. And how many women, I mean, you can't go into a room and not find, I would think 75% of that room have miscarriage, but no one ever talks about it. And it's such a heartbreaking experience.
Well, it's so private. Like, it is a heartbreaking experience. And I think that, at least from the women I know who have had miscarriages, whether it was like early on or later on in their pregnancy, it's such a feeling of loss, and there is a shame there. Like you had mentioned,
like,
you know,
you
like you're not woman enough. Yeah. Like you can't do something that your body naturally is supposed to be
what
able to do.
What makes me so sad, though, is it's such a sense of loss and heartache, and that women suffer it by themselves.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying, look, I had a miscarriage, and they would find out how many friends went through the same thing and can help them through it. I mean, why women suffer through that basically in silence is still mystifying to me. I think that this is a time that we should be open and talk about it. The statistics are very high that, you know, a miscarriage, and their miscarriage basically just says, hey, something was wrong with that egg. You know, that baby wasn't going to be developed correctly. Mm-hmm. So your body has an amazing way of detecting that. So anyway, I think in Los Angeles, to be honest, sort of the poster child for freezing your eggs and talking about it. And then once I did that, I would ironically get stopped in the frozen food aisle all the time by women who were like, I want to freeze my eggs. I had so many conversations with so many women that would come forward and talk about it. And with social networking too, so many women I think felt comfortable reaching out to me that way about it. So I started at age, like I said, I met Brady's father when I was 40. I started trying to have a baby when I was 41. Mm-hmm. I think I went through my first round of in vitro around 42 and it failed. Yeah. But I didn't want to quit. And so I started doing Clomid, which is one of the reproductive medicines that they give you to kind of increase your egg count. And I did that for the better part of 2 years. And fast forward, now I'm 45.
You were on Clomid for 2 years?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
I was on Clomid. I would have done more rounds of in vitro, but the problem was egg quality. And I was getting just as many eggs in Clomid as mm-hmm. I was in vitro.
Oh, so they were saying just, like...
I responded really well to that drug. If I don't want to get too technical if you don't understand process. But
I've done a little bit of reading and research and just mm-hmm. from stories I've had to write too about like the trend now for older women or women in their 40s, advanced maternal age, whatever they want to call it,
geriatric pregnancy is also what they refer to when I actually got pregnant.
That's a great feeling. That's a great feeling.
Fuck you.
You're just like, wow, that is the worst.
But that is the truth. I had Brady 3 weeks before I turned 46.
Wow.
I was basically a 46-year-old woman giving birth to a baby boy.
Wow.
Totally healthy, totally fine.
I think, though, that's very encouraging. Actually, in L.A., I don't know if it's just an L.A. thing or what, but in my Mom and Me group, there mm-hmm. was a mom who had her first baby through IVF donor eggs at 46. And then she is pregnant right now with her second at 48.
Wow.
With same donor eggs. So the babies will be genetically linked.
That's neat.
Yeah. And I was like, you're going to be 50 with a 2-year-old.
No, I know. It's frightening.
I'm like, I don't
even think about it. I'm going to be 50 when Brady starts school. I'm like, wow.
But yeah, she's doing great too. Well, I think... there's something that I have always been impressed with and been admired about women who are so open and honest about their fertility issues, because I think so many women do hide it and they're so embarrassed, or, you know, whatever the reasoning is that they don't want to talk about it. I will never forget. It was Christmas Day and you were filling in anchoring and you were on the desk with Sam Rubin and Greg Grunberg was
guest. That's right.
That
day, Henry was there, and
Henry
Eric,
was there.
I think I do remember that day really vividly.
And I was in the newsroom, you know, watching the newscast, like trying to stay awake. And but it was like it was either Christmas Day or Christmas
Eve.
Like
the eve of Christmas.
Yeah. And everybody was kind of going around saying what they want for Christmas, and you know, the guys were like, I don't know, new car, whatever. And you were like, I just want a baby.
Yeah.
And then you started crying. And I'm literally in the newsroom like, oh my God, Wendy. Like, it was so heartbreaking, but such a real and beautiful moment.
Yeah,
and
I was
just
really honest. I'm like, there's really nothing else that I want in life. I just want a baby.
I still get goosebumps now thinking about that, because I just, my heart was breaking for you.
It was crazy too how that
but
resonated.
But I didn't, it wasn't like I felt sorry for you.
No,
I just,
and
you know.
So many people too. That was just one of those days. I think people were home, they were watching. It's kind of like a weird day because, you know, it's not a typical work day. Yeah. And I think people were really watching, because I've had hundreds of people come up to me, women, like, I was watching that day. I remember mm-hmm. that day that you said, and maybe that was it, because so few newscasters will be that candid or have that opportunity to be that candid.
Yeah.
You know, because it was just in that moment.
Did
we
station
were doing
management
that.
Say something to you? Like, hey,
no,
that
I
was
don't think,
over
I don't
the
think
line
they
or...
watch. but it was a celebrity interview, and, you know, we're a morning show, so it wasn't as if we had just broken out of a, you know, a bad
breaking
story
news
or breaking
something,
news to say, oh, and I'd like to have a baby.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was interesting. So cut to, I had tried and tried and tried. I don't like to give up. I like to just, I can do this. I can do this. And the reality was, I knew somewhere inside me there was still one good egg, and I was going to find that one good egg, because that's all it takes.
Yeah.
I mean, one good egg. So that's why I tried Clomid week after week and month after month, and you know, went to, I mean, I had so many ultrasounds and so many near pregnancies and phantom pregnancies and so close and yet so far away. And it was just a hormonal roller coaster.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, you're working overnights too. I mean, practically overnights on the morning show on top of that, which is exhausting. And it's a stressful shift.
And you get a lot of hormones in your body. And, and it was just, it was crazy making time. It was crazy making time. So I was determined to do this. So now cut to I'm 44 and I am planning my 45th birthday. As we've discussed, I love to throw good parties. Mm-hmm. So I decided my 45th birthday, I was going to have a quinceañera. A quinceañera trace is what I call it. I just love the idea that I could wear a really big dress and wear a tiara. So we rented out the Sportsman's Lodge. I had all my girlfriends dressed up in quinceañera dresses. Mine, of course, was the biggest and the prettiest.
Of course.
And we had dance numbers. And
that's
it was
that
just,
beauty pageant in you.
It was.
Out,
I had a crown. It was like the greatest. I had the mariachi divas perform.
Oh,
the
great.
Whole thing was just great. There was tequila galore. Good times.
Yeah.
And I remember I went to Miami after that. We went on a little vacation. And I was with Bruce at the time. Bruce is Brady's father. And at that moment, I'm like, look, my life can either be one big quinceañera and it would be fine. I'm blessed with a lot of wonderful friends and I have a full life and I was running a nonprofit foundation and I had meaning and I had purpose and I had a good job and I had all of that. I said, or I could do one more Hail Mary and try to one last time have a baby. And I knew I was so at the edge. I mean, when you're at 44, 45, your eggs are shot statistically. I mean, there's always that one person.
There
that,
is.
You know,
yeah.
my cousin knows a girl who blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's great.
We
and
got
that's
pregnant
like
on the first
winning
try.
Winning
like,
the lottery.
Wow. Yeah.
But how many people really win the lottery? People do win the lottery, but how many people do? So I looked at the statistics and here's what they are. At age 45, this is where I started to put my reporter hat on because I knew all of this and I had been through it. I'd researched it.
Digging through
it.
The information.
When you were at 45 years of age, which is what I was, statistically speaking, you had a 2 to 3% chance of getting pregnant if you went through a successful round of in vitro fertilization. Once you got pregnant, you only had a 50% chance of keeping that baby and not miscarrying because miscarrying is so high at that age because, of course, you miscarry because there's something wrong with your eggs, and that would be the case in my in mine. If I made it through that, if I was one of the 2 or 3% that got pregnant, and if I was one of the 50% that was able to keep the baby past, you know, the scary miscarriage times, there was a 1 in 30% chance that my baby would have autism or some sort of autistic spectrum or some sort of Down syndrome. So there was all of that that played a part. Then I looked at donor eggs, and I had a 60 to 70% chance of getting pregnant. And all of a sudden, the scary miscarry statistic went down to like below 10 to 12% because these eggs were all genetically screened prior to, and they were all young eggs that I'd be using. And so I looked at it and I'm like, you know what? And of course, my whole thing about wanting to have a baby was I said that I was adopted as a child. So for me, I wanted my own genetic offspring. For me, I thought that would
connect me in some way.
That would connect me to this whole thing and heal me or do whatever it is that adopted kids go through and all of that. And it was interesting because I wanted a mini-me, as we all sort of
do. Sure,
sure. And I remember I was having dinner with some girlfriends, and they all whipped out pictures of their kids. And I'll be damned, all of their kids look like their husbands. I'm like, are you kidding? I could go through all of this, and at the end of the day, this kid could look nothing like me?
Yes.
So that, like, moment, I went, oh, huh. And then realized that what I wanted more than anything is that I really did want to carry the baby. I wanted the pregnancy. I wanted the
it's a really special
I did
thing,
I wanted to
yeah.
feel the kick. I wanted to feel the flutter. I wanted to be terrified in labor and delivery. I wanted all of that. I wanted to feel that.
And were you terrified in labor and delivery?
I had a C-section. It was the scariest fucking thing in
it's
the world.
It's terrifying, isn't it? Yeah. The C-section, I did a lot of research on like natural birth, but the C-section I didn't research as
you know
much.
What?
So I was
because
like,
people don't talk about it. It's too traumatizing and you're sort of in and out of it. I'm actually going to write something about it because I've got to get the word out there that this is what to be prepared for. But I digress. So I decided to do the donor egg, and I went to my partner at the time, Bruce, and I talk about him, but we're not together right now. I'm raising Brady as a single mom. But I went to him and I said, look, this will be my Hail Mary. I promise you, try this donor egg thing with me, and if it doesn't work, I'm going to go away in another direction because now we're talking, you know, 45, 46, 47 and the money that I had spent. And I'm like, everyone needs a Hail Mary when it comes to fertility.
So you just sort of felt like you had reached the point where you were like, I can't financially, physically, emotionally continue to do this.
Right.
Like it's either this or, and I'm done or it works.
You get to that point. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I couldn't say it better myself. I mean, the money spent, the time and energy in, and it's not like the eggs are getting any younger. If anything, right. every month I'm getting further and further away from finding that one good egg, and that one good egg might not even be there. Like, that one good egg could have been toast when I started this.
Yeah.
It just, you know, you just don't know. You don't know
there's
the egg quality.
There's so many unknowns in fertility.
You know that you have the eggs. You just don't know what the egg quality is.
Right.
And so you're hoping that
there's
still...
really have a lot of ways to do accurate testing
they're
on...
They're getting better, but no, they yeah. can't. They can't.
I mean, can't really predict. So there's so many unknowns when it comes to women's fertility.
Yeah.
And like you said,
I saw women in the clinic that were in their early 30s that were having challenges
yeah.
because of egg quality and different things. So, and for me too, my only issue was the egg quality. It wasn't like I had problems carrying the baby or I wasn't producing, you know, all of, thank God for me, all
that
of that
there
was,
any other
was
issues,
great. And
yeah.
I had tested my partner. This wasn't a problem on his end. This mm-hmm. was just, I had old scrambled eggs that were just dusty and powdery. So, cut to, I start looking at donor egg banks. Now, this mm-hmm. is very strange. This is like a weird online dating experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go onto these online profiles and look at them. The only difference is you know that if you go through this, the chances are someone's definitely going to get knocked up after this date.
Right,
like you're
right.
going to meet and something's going to happen here. So I went through and I was still looking for a sign. So let me tell you, I went with myeggbank.com out of Atlanta, Georgia. And yes you go to myeggbank.com.
Wow,
and
okay.
that's where you find this.
Uh-huh.
And they recruit. It is true. They recruit college-age girls from various parts of the country. They go through psychological screening. They go through medical screening. They let the girls donate maybe two, maybe three times. They don't let them do it over and over again.
Right.
It's a very, you know, and yes, the girls do get paid, but not enough to make them rich. I think it's just something. Some girls, I think, are compelled to do it because they feel altruistic. Others see it as a
way to help pay for college.
Way to
help
pay. Yeah, exactly. And you know, an egg is an egg is an egg. Until mm-hmm. it meets a sperm and someone carries it, it's an egg.
Right.
So, and anyway, so I was still looking for a sign. So at that point, it was $5,000 to get a lot of six eggs. When I say a lot, it was like a lot, meaning
like
a grouping of six
yeah.
eggs. Mm-hmm. So you put down a $500 deposit, and then you get to look at all the profiles. I'm like, okay, well, you know what? I've spent God knows how much.
I'll put down this
$500. And if I can find something and it works, it works. And I was still looking for my sign.
Mm-hmm.
So I went on to myeggbank.com, and then you start to go down, and you're like, okay, let's click Caucasian.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's start there.
Good choice.
So that narrows it down.
Yeah.
Narrow it down. I'm like, well, I'm tall and my partner was tall. So if I'm going to genetically engineer a child, let's make it be a super athlete or a supermodel. So I've got no problem. So I started looking down the height and I saw a girl who was 5'11", Caucasian, 21 years old. I'm like, well, let's look on that. So mm-hmm. this is the first one I came to, and I go on, and she's sweet, and she loves, you know, to play volleyball, and she loves sushi, and she loves mashed potatoes, and she likes to travel. And then bam, she's a junior in college studying to be a broadcast journalist.
Wow. And what immediately hit you at that moment?
That was my sign. That was my sign. And if I needed more, I read down a little bit further, and it said that she extensively does volunteer work and would one day also like to run her own nonprofit foundation.
Yeah.
It was not lost on me that I was old enough to be this woman's mother. Mm-hmm. She could be my daughter. You know, I mean, I could have had her when I was... And it wasn't lost on me that she was me. She was the college girl who wanted to be a journalist and wanted to change the world. And here she was. The eggs were there. And I said, this is it. I did not look, Heather, at even another profile after that. I wanted a sign. I needed it. There it was. And then a week later, these eggs arrive, and I had, you know, you purchase six.
It was that fast?
It goes like that.
She had, the eggs were already ready
yes,
to go.
The eggs
then.
Are already, they basically harvest the eggs. Mm-hmm. And the way that this egg bank works is, you know, when you're young, you might be able to produce 20 or 30 eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they sell them off in groups of like six. So they're different. So this was the lot of six. Well, it must have been maybe, I don't know how many she had produced, but I ended up with seven eggs, lucky seven. Like there was just an extra egg in there. And I was like, okay,
well,
let's
you go.
Take it.
Let's take it.
So if you know much about fertility at that point, they sync up your cycle with the eggs. That's the great thing about using frozen eggs. These were frozen eggs,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of the new edge of science. You're not, the other way to do it is you find a donor, you maybe meet her, you go through an agency.
That's the way that I've always
her.
Understood it.
Yeah.
You pay for her travel expenses.
You pay for that. You pay for, you know, all
any
this.
Health is, doctor visits or health care.
More expensive, mm-hmm. and it's a more lengthy process. And then you've got to kind of sync up your cycle with her cycle. And this one, the eggs come frozen. They basically thaw them out. They mix them with your partner's sperm. Mm-hmm. They watch them grow for 4 or 5 days, and then they put them in you.
Yeah.
They basically come in a big dry ice container. And of course, we did a story on all of this. I wanted to document how this whole process came to be. Mm-hmm. So I went from deciding to choosing to having those eggs here in Los Angeles within a period of about 3 weeks. So it went,
wow.
It went like that.
Super fast.
Super fast, super fast. And so we went to the races, as I like to call it, because that's where you like to see how these eggs develop and mature. And if you know a lot about fertility, not all of the embryos make it. I mean, basically you see
because
the cells
the quality
divide, but they fall off.
Yeah.
So it's blastocyst is what it's called. It kind of goes back to your basic biology where you watch how these cells divide and multiply. And the first day, they all fertilize. Woohoo!
Yay.
And then by like day two, they're like, well, 5 of them look really good. And then day 4, well, now 3 of them are looking okay. And then by the time we got there, they're like, we've got 1 good egg. I'm like, we've got 1 out of 7. Now, I was hoping to maybe have 3 good eggs.
Yeah, have some.
And in
some
my
options.
Mind, I was like, still, maybe we could put, maybe I could have twins, or maybe I could put these other ones on ice. I had 1 good egg. I had done all of this, and it was down to 1 egg.
And what was going through your mind at that point? Because talk about an emotional roller coaster of just your body. Like, your body had been, you know, kind of stringing you along a little bit. Like, we're going to go, and then not go, and then go.
Yeah.
Then you reach out to somebody else and say, all right, they're going to give me your
eggs.
We're going to go. And then.
Well, to me, it was the ultimate Hail Mary. You know,
geez.
It was the ultimate.
Absolutely.
Like, I wanted one last shot, and this was one last shot. And here's the thing, too. At my age, even if I would have had 2 good eggs, my doctor probably still only would have done a single embryo transfer. He would have said to me, twins is idiotic.
Yeah.
And dangerous. And, you know, just, I think he would have said, let's just do the single and we'll keep this one over here. But, you know, me, I would have been like, no,
put them all in. Yeah.
They would have divided. I would have had an octomom.
This will be a totally different podcast
totally
episode.
Different podcast.
So how are those 8 babies? Wendy,
how's
life with that 8 babies?
So I went to them and, I had a great deal of confidence, and knowledge was power at that point too. I looked at that cell and it was perfect. It was perfect. Like, they see how they develop. And
yeah.
It's interesting, when you look at embryos, they actually grade them when you're in the fertility process. Like, this is an A, this is a C. Most of us are C embryos. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know that, but most of us are Cs. We're barely passing. Exactly. Like, your embryo
cycle is,
you're a C, egg quality, embryo quality. This was an A. Like,
yeah.
They looked at it, they're like, this
is
great.
Perfect.
So all my body had to do was accept it. And I had the best scientist there. I just, you know what? I felt calm at this point. I think that there was a sense of peace and serenity. And I think I knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
I wasn't scared.
You were like, this is my egg.
This is my egg.
This is my baby. Did you have that moment where you kind of looked at the embryo and you were like,
oh, I have the
felt
picture.
A weird connect, like a, not a weird connection, but like a connection with
I
it.
Felt a confidence. I felt a confidence that this was it, that we had done everything the right way. And yeah, I didn't have a backup plan. This was it. But that's all I needed was 1 good egg. And secretly tell to you as well, I wanted a boy. I did.
Oh, really?
I would have taken anything.
Yeah.
But in my heart of hearts, I wanted a little boy.
Yeah.
You know, because if I could have one child, I just, that bond between a mother and a son is really great. It's really great.
So sweet.
So, and boys just crack me up. I mean, mm-hmm. look, I'm dramatic enough. We don't need another little diva running around. I got that part covered.
Right.
I got that part covered. So, no, I just remember everything like so vividly. So we went through the single embryo transfer, and basically in 10 days, you know, if you're pregnant, I mean, you wait 10 days, it's the 10-day waiting period. And I was supposed to wait for the blood test, which is the most conclusive, mm-hmm. but are you kidding? I can't wait.
I went and got an
EPT test, and I've taken hundreds of them, it felt like, and I wanted to have that moment. I wanted to have my moment.
Where you get to see that positive.
Well, I got to see it. Mm-hmm. And so I did, and I, you know, it's indescribable. It's indescribable. And then I went through the next part where we had the camera in there and we actually saw, you know, the positive part. But then the next part was, and I have this on tape, is when I heard the heartbeat. I mean, that was it.
Did your heart
that
just melt? And did you cry?
Oh, I did. They actually had me on camera during that too, because I just cried. And so it was great too, because the viewers really went through that experience with me, and they saw that. And I think there were so, I was so overwhelmed by the outpouring of emotion when people saw it. And I had such a healthy pregnancy and I had a happy pregnancy.
You did,
and
yeah. You were so happy. Like, I think I saw you when we were at Ginger Chan's.
My skin was great. Yeah.
Oh my God, I know. Me too. Now my skin is a wreck. I feel like a zitty teenager.
You're like, you're glowing. I'm like, my skin is fabulous.
There is a pregnancy glow. Your hormones are at their most level, but they're high and everything's pumping. And like, it's, you know, it's sort of what your body wants to do.
Yeah.
Is to carry a baby. And so, I just remember seeing you, I think, at Ginger. Were you pregnant at Ginger Chan's baby shower for her twins?
I don't know if I was. I'm trying to think. No, I had decided that I was using a donor egg then.
Is that when you had decided for donor eggs?
Yeah. Maybe that was my pre-glow. I decided. In fact, I had to leave that earlier to go get a blood test.
Yeah.
I remember I was going, I had made the decision at that point.
And you had come to my baby shower when I was pregnant with Channing. And I just remember, I was like, well, I'm just going to stand up and say a little something and tell everyone I said thank you. Or tell everyone thank you. And then I stood up and I was like, ooh. And I just started bawling. I'm like, what's wrong with me? And then I, you know, now knowing now it's like something about the hormones and you know, it changes you.
Oh yeah.
Do you feel now like a changed person?
Oh, absolutely.
What do you think has changed the most?
That's a great question. No, and it's an easy one to answer. Joy. I have a palpable joy in my life.
Yeah.
I've had happiness in my life. I've had great moments. I've had memorable experiences, but I have true joy now.
Mm-hmm.
And over the simple things, I rush home because there's someone that's going to be giggling when I'm there. And it's like I said, it's a happiness that I feel that it's around me. It surrounds me and it envelops me. And it's a purpose and a uniqueness and a focus that I've never had before. And a laziness too. I mean, I used to feel like if I didn't do 9,000 things, I wasn't succeeding. And now I'm like,
you're allowing yourself
to. We're going to sit down and watch this stupid rainbow horse thing that you tend to like on Baby First TV. And we're going to love it. And then I remember the day he discovered his toes. I'm like, this is one of the greatest, happiest days of my life.
Yeah.
So it's just, it really was what I needed to complete me. And, you know, not going into what could be another podcast, but I have suffered from depression in my life. I'd also been pretty open about that because I don't think enough women talk about that. Mm-hmm. Enough people in general, but that's women especially. So I had suffered from that, and I had certainly issues from being an adopted child and all of that. And when I delivered Brady, I was no longer with his father. So in the room,
I don't know what happened there, but I'm assuming it's his fault. I don't know this guy. Because why? I mean, like, honestly, like, you're carrying this man's child.
We have become great co-parents.
Okay, good.
But I will say, still, if you go through this much fertility, that year, it puts a real strain on a relationship.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, I think we were pretty much done even before. But you know what? He knew how important this was to me, and he's a great dad. And so we are a modern family.
There you go.
We're making it work, and he loves his son, so it can't That's be, good. You know, it all ends up working out. I had a point, though. It was a pretty good one, too.
And I totally distracted you.
No. I was in the delivery room. And, of course, I had my two girlfriends, one to document, one to hold my hand. And then I called my psychiatrist, Dr. Sophie, because everyone in L.A. should probably have their psychiatrist in the room. Now, I think that should be a requirement now. I think, like, every woman needs her psychiatrist there.
Some of the more earthy moms out here call them doulas. You know, well, I'm sure you read about Charlie the doulas.
And I Dr. Sophie and I are very good friends as well. Yeah. And he's my psychiatrist. So he was there, and it was great. And I remember speaking to him after, and he saw the joy in my face, and he says, this heals you.
Yeah.
He goes, I think this is what you needed to heal yourself. We are broken in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
But having this experience and having Brady has really healed me and has made me whole in a way that I never realized.
Do you feel like parenting and being a mom now has given you a greater sense of purpose? Or a different
set of purpose. Yeah. I mean, I think it's the kind of the one that I always felt that I was destined to have. I still am looking for other things to give me meaning as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I as much as I love Brady,
because you're still very much a career woman.
Still very much nothing changed. And, you know, I want to.
Because I think a lot of people when they have babies, a lot of moms, they lose sight of who they were before.
Yeah, and I wanted to keep that too. And I think it's, you know, when you're an older mom too, I think It's even a little harder to give it up, because you're like, this is my life. It's great. Brady's just worked into my life. Like, I take him places. I just, you know, occasionally he'll get to go on a story with me. Not the murders, but, you know, the feature stories.
I've seen a few of those.
So he's made a few cameo appearances. So that's unique that I get to do that. No, I still want to keep writing. I still want to use my platform. I still want to.
Because you wrote for the Huffington Post. Hey, you shared your story on the
Breaking
Huffington
News.
Post.
Yeah. I'm writing a book.
Oh, yay.
I'm writing a book.
That's fantastic.
On the fertility experience. I think that it reaches.
Great.
And so I'm working on that right now.
I love that. Are you 2017 hoping to publish or later
this
year?
I'm hoping to get it done this summer, because if I don't put myself on a deadline, it will be 2050 and I'll still be like, I'm writing a book.
Breaking news. Still working.
No, and I'll even tell this. I have decided that the title of the book is going to be called The Pregnant Pause.
Oh, cute. I love that.
Yes. And about all of the humorous things that happened and the experience in general. And about women who do put pregnancy on pause. And when you take it off pause, you know, sometimes you really work hard on the fast forward and wish you could rewind. And, you know, here I'm giving you the book jacket right now. But that's going to be my story, because I think it will really resonate. And I am hoping, I mean, look, I am one person, but I am one person with a big, loud voice.
And a great
and
platform.
A nice platform. Yeah. And it is in Los Angeles. Yeah. You know, we're in a major market. And I know people have shared my story. And it has gone from, you know, place to place, and social networking is amazing to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. But if me sharing my story makes one other career girl go and freeze her damn eggs, I'm happy.
Do you think that would have made a difference for you? Like, knowing what you know now, like, what would you go back and do differently?
You know what? Difficult question to answer, because 10 years ago when I was 35, freezing your eggs, the technology wasn't that good. There was still a very small percentage that it would actually work, because freezing embryos is a better idea. Freezing with a partner, so you have a solid. Yeah. But that was 10 years ago. Right now, freezing your eggs has like an 80 to 90% chance of success. So I tell every woman that I know, and I have these conversations with fellow reporters on crime scenes in between live shots, I say, how old are you? And if they tell me 35, I go, do not stop, go directly to your gynecologist right now and spend $15,000 and do it. And they go, oh, it's so much money. I'm like, how much are you spending on clothes this year? How much are you spending on those boots? How much will you spend on your vacation with your girlfriend to St. Bart's? Like, I know it's a lot, but it pales in comparison to what you will spend if you have to go through a really intensive round of in vitro fertilization. Or furthermore, what you will be able to do too is you buy yourself a sense of certainty and almost an insurance policy. Mm-hmm. You will make better choices about the person that you are with, because you know you don't have to have a baby with that guy, because he's the one
he's
that's
the
in
last
your life
one. It's
at
maybe
that time
your last
when
shot.
You need to have it. So you have that. The problem for women, really, generally speaking, isn't about having babies at an older age. It's about the quality of your eggs. Your eggs age. That is why teenage girls get pregnant by
so
just
easily just looking
talking
at
about
sperm
sex.
Just by hopping in the back seat
because
for a
their
little
eggs are perfect. So every egg that comes down the chute is ready to have
ready
a baby.
Go,
it's as we age, those egg, the egg quality falls off, and then that is why, you know, it takes time and it takes energy.
It takes a lot of
energy.
So
I say now freeze your eggs. For me, I don't know if it would have made that much of a difference. It might have made the difference, but it just, you know, it was what it was. I met the person to have the baby with at, and let me back up too. I don't mean to ramble a little bit, but.
No, you're not.
I wanted to, in my mind, I could have one unknown. One unknown was okay. Mm-hmm. To have an unknown donor egg was okay, because I was carrying the baby and I knew the father. Like, it would have been very difficult for me to go down this route and say, I'm going to use a donor egg and a surrogate and I don't know who.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Now you're just weird science.
Now just
it's
hoping
just,
for
now,
the best.
Now adopt.
Yeah.
Now go down that road. And but for me, that it worked out.
Yeah.
It worked out. Like, I got to carry that baby and I had every experience with him. And just to maybe kind of sum things up for you, there was a moment I was speaking at an event down, I think, in Orange County, and a woman came up who had watched the show and was very familiar with my story. And she said to me, I think we had shown a picture of Brady up on the screen, and we were doing something, and it was a female audience, so we were incorporating that. And I said, that's my son. And she came up, she's like, he is your spitting image. And I said to him, I'm like, oh, thank you. But of course, you know, or if you don't know, because I still say I used a donor egg. I make that part of the dialogue.
There's
nothing. It's already out there. So Google it and you see it. And she goes, no, he has your spirit.
Yeah.
He has your smile. He laughs. And this was a woman who just had seen him on TV and right. some of the interactions and stuff. And to me, Heather, if there is one thing that I think is the best part about me, it's not my eye color. It's not my hair color. In fact, I don't even know what my hair color is. It's my personality.
Yeah.
So if that's the thing that I gave Brady, then that's the best part of me.
The best part.
And it doesn't matter the other stuff.
Yeah.
To me, I gave him that.
Yeah. If there's anything I know about you, that's my favorite part too. I don't know what your hair color is. I don't care.
No one does.
But people love being around you because of your spirit. And that's very telling. That's very telling and very true.
I believe that I gave them to him. I think that all of us are products of nature and nurture.
Yeah.
And yes, I had to cheat on the nature part. But every part of that nurturing is me.
Yeah.
And that's what he has.
Oh, mama.
Mama. Oh, I still have the hormones.
I know. And then, honestly, it doesn't get any better. I cry constantly.
No, I know.
And I'm like, stop it. You're not supposed to have any feelings. we're not supposed to have emotions. But, no, I love it. And Brady is so sweet. And he is you. Like, he is a part of you. And no one can ever take that away or change any part of that.
I was going to title my book, If I Push It Out of My Vagina, It's Mine. But I thought that was maybe.
Please go with that title. Please. Oh my God. I would love that.
That would be the subtitle.
That would be the subtitle. Pregnant pause. If I push it out of my vagina, it's mine. Oh my God, Wendy. I love that so much. Well, like I said, I have loved following your story myself.
Thank you,
and I have been such a big cheerleader of yours. Even though I work for a competing station now, I think what you're doing and what you're sharing with other women is fantastic and really brave. I don't know that I would be as brave, to be honest with you. I wish I could say I have as much courage.
I believe that secrets only have power when we keep them secret.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no shame in this.
Yeah.
I was an older woman. You know,
yeah.
I wanted to have a baby and I wanted a perfect baby. Yeah. And I got one.
You did.
I did.
I love him so much. Well, I'm so happy for you. And I'm so thankful that you came by to share this story with everybody.
Oh, thank you.
If people want to find out more about you or keep track of you or like find out when your book's coming out, how can they find you?
1-900. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. Wait a minute. Let me get a pen.
No, I'm on Facebook. That's the best place right now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to develop some stuff and build from there. But everything
is on Facebook.
Is it KTLA
Wendy Birch or just Wendy Birch?
I do have a public page and a private page. So find the public page.
Yeah. I'm on the private page.
Yeah.
Jerks.
I decided you would actually
inside.
Know me. If I've actually had a conversation with you, I do have a public.
Right.
The public page is much more interesting. I post on that much more.
You do,
with more things. The
and you're on the
page.
Twitter.
I am on the Twitter, Good News Wendy.
Yes. And are you on Instagram or anything?
No, but I'm going to join it because apparently all the kids are doing
all
Instagram.
All the kids are
all
on Instagram.
All the kids are on the Instagram.
And all of the like mommy bloggers and everything I'm slowly finding out too.
Yeah, that's a whole other world.
It
but
is.
I do hope to have the book ready for publication next year. So that's my goal.
Yay.
And
well, you'll have to come back on and tell us about the book and we'll help promote it.
All I need to do is just find some time to write it. And then
In
my mind, it's fabulous.
That's all you need. Just time. You have a 1-year-old. Good luck with that.
I'm sure I'm going to find a lot of extra
lots
time.
Of time.
Quiet time where it's just me and the laptop writing.
Exactly.
Benadryl, I think, is my... No.
Oh, or whiskey. Whiskey. Little bourbon.
Little whiskey. Things should be fine.
Whatever helps.
That could be in the thank you.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank
whiskey. To thank
whiskey. Benadryl.
Oh, my God.
This is
God.
Horrible. I'm just joking. Not really.
She's not. It's real.
All right. I love you.
Yes, I love you too. Thank you so much for coming to the show. And everybody, I will also put links to where you can find and follow Wendy on motherhoodinhollywood.com. I will also put information there if you have questions about infertility, in particular activities in your area for Infertility Awareness Week. You can go to resolve.org. I'll put information on motherhoodinhollywood.com as well. Sorry, I'm throwing so many websites at you. I encourage you, though, to reach out to people in your local community and to friends and family members and discuss your concerns and your issue if you are facing infertility. You are not alone. You don't have to go through this alone. There are resources in place for support and encouragement. And I hope this episode of Motherhood in Hollywood has been an encouragement to you. Thank you so much for listening and we'll see you next week.
Mama funny.
Balls.